What's up, Oos? Main event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba. Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
The locked cell phone, a cold, silent rectangle lying mere inches from Sandra Birchmore's lifeless hand, held within its memory the chilling truth of a betrayal that reached the highest echelons of trust. It was February 2021, and the pandemic's long, isolating winter had cast a pall over the world. But for 23-year-old Sandra, a flicker of hope had finally ignited. She was pregnant, a dream, long cherished, now on the verge of becoming reality. Yet within days, that dream was extinguished, her life snuffed out in a Canton apartment, the scene meticulously crafted to resemble a suicide. The initial assessment was tragically simplistic, but those who truly knew Sandra, a young woman who had navigated a lifetime of hardship with unwavering resilience, felt a visceral certainty that this was no act of despair. This was violence, cold and calculated, and it would trigger a relentless, years-long pursuit of justice, exposing a deeply entrenched web of alleged abuse, cover-ups, and systemic failures within the very institution Sandra had once idealized, the police. Sandra Birchmore's early life was marked by a series of profound challenges. The absence of her biological father, a void that left a lasting imprint, coupled with her mother Denise's constant struggles with illness, created a backdrop of financial instability and emotional strain. Sandra, an only child, often found herself in the role of caregiver, tending to her mother's needs from a young age. This early responsibility forced her to mature quickly, sacrificing the carefree innocence of childhood. Yet amidst these difficulties, Sandra possessed an indomitable spirit, a fierce loyalty to those she loved, and a deep yearning for connection. She found a sense of belonging in her close bond with her grandmother, a source of unwavering support and affection. And she sought structure, purpose, and a sense of community in the Stoughton Police Explorers, a program designed to mentor young people interested in careers in law enforcement. It was within this seemingly protective environment, a space where she sought guidance and role models, that the seeds of an unspeakable tragedy were sown. The Stoughton Police Explorers, under the leadership of Robert Devine, operated with a certain degree of laxity, blurring the lines between professional mentorship and personal relationships. While the program undoubtedly provided positive guidance and discipline for many young participants, it also fostered an environment where power dynamics could be easily manipulated and exploited. Devine, a charismatic figure within the department and the community, cultivated close relationships with his young charges, often assuming a paternal role that in some instances veered into inappropriate territory. This atmosphere of unchecked authority and blurred boundaries created the perfect breeding ground for the alleged abuse that would ultimately claim Sandra's life. Enter Matthew Farwell, a towering figure both physically, standing at 6'4", and in terms of his position within the Stoughton Police Department. A former explorer himself, Farwell had risen through the ranks, embodying the very image of a dedicated officer. He was a mentor, a role model, a figure of authority whom Sandra, with her inherent trust in law enforcement, naturally gravitated towards. Their relationship began innocently enough, with Farwell offering guidance and support within the Explorers program. But what started as seemingly harmless mentorship soon twisted into something far more sinister, a predatory grooming process that exploited Sandra's vulnerabilities and her deep-seated trust. The grooming, as alleged by federal prosecutors, was insidious and gradual. Farwell allegedly nurtured Sandra's trust, becoming a confidant, a source of support in a life that had often lacked stability. He filled a void, stepping into a role that resembled a surrogate father figure, further solidifying his position of authority and influence. This calculated manipulation culminated in a sexual relationship that began when Sandra was just 15 years old and Farwell was 27, a gross violation of trust, a criminal act that would haunt Sandra and ultimately set the stage for her tragic end. The discovery of Sandra's body in her apartment on that bleak February day initially presented a picture of despair, a narrative of suicide. The scene was meticulously staged, the strap around her neck attached to the closet door handle, the carefully positioned body. But the details, upon closer inspection, began to unravel this fabricated narrative. Sandra, on the cusp of motherhood, had been actively planning for the future. She had made arrangements for her cats, contacted a newborn photographer, and spoke excitedly about the arrival of her child. These were not the actions of someone contemplating taking their own life. And then there was the cell phone, a digital extension of Sandra's life, a repository of her hopes, dreams, and daily interactions. It lay just inches from her outstretched hand, locked at 9:13 p.m. on the night she disappeared. This seemingly minor detail became a pivotal piece of the puzzle, a silent witness that spoke volumes about the events that transpired in those final hours. Investigators later confirmed that Matthew Farwell had visited Sandra's apartment that evening, his arrival captured by the building's security camera. His masked appearance, a stark contrast to his known aversion to masks and the fact that he had been granted access to her apartment, raised immediate red flags. The initial investigation into Sandra's death shockingly concluded that it was a suicide. This finding ignited a firestorm of anger and disbelief among Sandra's loved ones. They knew Sandra's strength, her resilience, and the joy she felt about her pregnancy. They knew with unwavering certainty that she would never have taken her own life. Their suspicions immediately focused on Matthew Farwell, the father of her unborn child, a man whose carefully constructed facade was about to crumble. Sandra's pregnancy threatened to expose their past, a secret relationship that could destroy Farwell's career, his reputation, and his family life. The unwavering belief of Sandra's family in her innocence prompted a second investigation, an internal affairs inquiry within the Stoughton Police Department itself. This investigation unearthed a deeply disturbing pattern of alleged misconduct, not only by Matthew Farwell, but also by his twin brother William, also a Stoughton officer, and their mentor Robert Devine. The internal affairs report painted a chilling portrait of a department where professional boundaries were routinely disregarded, where abuse was allegedly tolerated, and where a culture of silence protected those in positions of power. The report revealed that William Farwell had also engaged in a sexual relationship with Sandra when she was an adult, further highlighting the systemic nature of the alleged exploitation. It also revealed inappropriate messages sent to Sandra by Devine. Despite the disturbing findings of the Internal Affairs report, no criminal charges were initially filed. It seemed as though the power and influence of the police department continued to shield those implicated, hindering the pursuit of justice for Sandra. But the fight for truth, fueled by the unwavering determination of Sandra's family, was far from over. Nearly 3 years after Sandra's death, the FBI, recognizing the potential for a miscarriage of justice, stepped in, launching their own independent investigation. They meticulously re-examined the existing evidence, uncovering crucial details that had been overlooked or dismissed in the previous inquiries. They focused intently on the cell phone, the digital witness that held the potential to unlock the truth. The FBI's investigation finally provided the breakthrough that Sandra's loved ones had been desperately seeking. In the summer of 2023, federal prosecutors announced the indictment of Matthew Farwell for the murder of Sandra Birchmore. The indictment alleged that Farwell had strangled Sandra to silence her, to protect his secrets, and then meticulously staged the scene to resemble a suicide, attempting to evade accountability for his heinous crime. The federal charges carried a potential sentence of death, a stark testament to the severity of the alleged offenses. The story of Sandra Birchmore is a tragedy, a stark reminder of the devastating consequences of exploitation, betrayal, and the abuse of power. It is a story that underscores the critical importance of oversight, accountability, and the unwavering pursuit of justice, even when that pursuit challenges the very institutions we are meant to trust. And it is a story that might have remained tragically untold, buried beneath layers of deception and institutional protection, if not for the locked cell phone, a silent witness whose digital memory finally spoke, revealing the truth and bringing a measure of justice to a young woman whose life was stolen too soon. The question remains a haunting echo in the wake of this tragedy. How many other stories remain locked, waiting for someone to finally look closely enough? The immediate aftermath of Sandra Birchmore's death was a blur of grief and disbelief. In early March 2021, a small, somber gathering filled Immaculate Conception Church in Stoughton for her funeral mass. Soon after, family members undertook the heartbreaking task of clearing out her Canton apartment, a space she had only recently begun to call home. Amidst the boxes and unpacked belongings, they encountered stark reminders of a future Sandra would never see. A brand new stroller, a baby car seat still in its box, and a handmade sign announcing her pregnancy to Matthew Farwell. These tangible symbols of anticipation clashed sharply with the official narrative of suicide. There was the half-finished laundry, a load in the washer, another in the dryer. Why, they wondered, would someone on the verge of taking their own life bother with such a mundane task? On February 1st, the last day she was seen alive, Sandra had actively sought someone to care for her beloved cats during her labor, a detail that further contradicted the idea of a pre-planned suicide. Then a relative made a discovery that would become a nagging symbol of investigative oversight. On the floor of Sandra's bedroom lay her cherished pink flamingo necklace, a keepsake from her grandmother. It wasn't simply lost, it was broken in the middle, a tangle of hair caught in the fractured chain. This detail, conspicuously absent from any police report, raised a chilling question. If investigators had missed something so obvious, what else had they overlooked? The disbelief among Sandra's friends and family was unwavering. They found it impossible to reconcile the image of a vibrant, communicative young woman constantly sharing her life through texts and social media with the idea that she would silently end her own life. This was a young woman who wouldn't have a sandwich without posting it on three different social media platforms. Her cousin Angelique Perozzi stated, "The notion that Sandra would vanish without a word, especially in the wake of a potential conflict with Farwell, simply didn't compute." Perozzi, a union field organizer, channeled her grief into action. Just 2 days after Sandra's body was found, she took to Facebook urging anyone with information to contact the authorities. This call to action yielded results. At least 11 individuals, including a former classmate, Sandra's hairdresser, and even someone Sandra owed money to, contacted the authorities. Many of these individuals had information stemming from Sandra's own accounts of her relationship with Matthew Farwell and her excitement about the pregnancy. From the outset, Perozzi herself maintained direct contact with the state troopers assigned to the case. Her message was clear and unwavering. Sandra had been in a sexual relationship with a married police officer. She was thrilled about becoming a mother, and no one believed she had taken her own life. The investigation, she insisted, needed to focus intently on Farwell. However, for a considerable time, these pleas seemed to fall on deaf ears. When Canton officers discovered Sandra's body on February 4th, they immediately contacted the district attorney's office, as required by Massachusetts law. The case landed on the desk of Trooper Matthew Dunn, one of the state police detectives assigned to Norfolk District Attorney Michael W. Morrissey. The initial assessment, relayed to Dunn, was an apparent suicide death. Despite this initial framing, Dunn, to his credit, noted in his report that the cause and manner of death are pending further study. Even his supervisor, John Fanning, acknowledged the need for further investigation in an email to Morrissey, who concurred. In the weeks that followed, state troopers interviewed 20 people, half of whom had proactively contacted Morrissey's office. While the troopers followed up on some leads, none pointed towards a murder charge. In a 2022 statement, Morrissey's office declared that the investigation had found no evidence of foul play. The possibility of a statutory rape charge against Farwell, initially considered based on recovered text messages, was also dismissed due to the death of the primary witness, Sandra. By late December 2021, the focus of the state investigators had bizarrely shifted to whether Farwell could be charged with larceny, essentially stealing taxpayer money, for allegedly meeting Sandra for sexual encounters while on duty. This pursuit of a lesser charge, while the possibility of murder remained unresolved, further fueled the family's frustration and distrust. A crucial question remained: how thoroughly had state authorities investigated Sandra's death as a potential homicide? Investigating agencies withheld key records, citing the ongoing nature of the case. The leaders of these agencies, Morrissey, Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Mindy Hull, and State Police Colonel Jeffrey Noble, declined interviews. However, an analysis of investigative records revealed a series of missed clues, overlooked red flags, and investigative avenues left unexplored. These oversights, while not individually conclusive proof of murder, collectively formed a body of evidence that experts argued should have prompted a fundamental reassessment of the suicide theory. The initial impression of suicide spread rapidly following the discovery of Sandra's body. Canton police officers informed a detective that Sandra had hanged herself. A school resource officer in Stoughton who knew Sandra mentioned her struggles following the deaths of her mother and grandmother, and also stated that Sandra had a history of falsely claiming pregnancy. While Sandra had confided in friends about past miscarriages, her recent blood tests indicated a healthy pregnancy. Investigators who entered Sandra's apartment noted the clutter and disarray, but found no signs of a struggle. No defensive wounds were found on Sandra's body. Trooper Kevin Tufts even began preparing a standard form for the medical examiner, marking no for homicide and suicide for the possible manner of death. However, Sandra's aunt, Darlene Smith, immediately expressed disbelief upon hearing the news of Sandra's supposed suicide. She emphasized Sandra's excitement about her pregnancy, a sentiment echoed by others who knew her. After the police left, the property manager, Aaron Porter, reviewed the security footage again and spotted a man she didn't recognize entering and leaving the building around the time of Sandra's disappearance. This man, masked and hooded, was later identified as Matthew Farwell. Porter also relayed a crucial piece of information. A woman had called the complex's emergency line, reporting that Sandra had told her that her police officer boyfriend wanted her to get an abortion, or he would take care of the problem himself. On February 5th, while state troopers gathered evidence and conducted interviews, pathologist Maria Del Mar Capo Martinez performed Sandra's autopsy. Notably, no representatives from the Norfolk County DA's office attended the autopsy. Despite the initial suicide assessment, Dr. Capo Martinez conducted a more thorough examination than typically performed in suspected suicide cases. In Stoughton, Police Chief Donna McNamara launched an internal affairs investigation into Farwell's relationship with Sandra, entrusting her Deputy Chief Brian Holmes with the task. This investigation, while focused on potential departmental violations, would ultimately uncover critical information. By Saturday afternoon, Troopers Fanning and Dunn interviewed Farwell in a Stoughton Elementary School parking lot. The interview, not recorded, was described as collegial. Farwell admitted to having sex with Sandra, but claimed it began in early 2020 and had ceased in October of that year, making him unlikely to be the father of her child. He also claimed Sandra had been sectioned multiple times for mental illness and had been sexually active with other men. All of these claims would later be disputed by evidence. The fact that a married police officer admitted to a sexual relationship with a woman he met when she was a minor should have been a major red flag, according to criminal justice experts. Yet, The initial investigation seemed to give Farwell the benefit of the doubt. Following up on leads from Perazzi's Facebook post, Trooper Dunn learned from a friend of Sandra's that Farwell had become enraged upon learning of her pregnancy, even saying things like, "I wish you would kill yourself," or "I wish you were dead." Fanning emailed the pathologist's office to share this information, emphasizing the urgency of the matter. Later that day, Farwell turned over his personal phone but admitted to deleting messages from Sandra. He then made two telling Google searches. "Can deleted iMessage be recovered, his Celebrite?" and "Can you revoke consent in Massachusetts?" He deleted these searches, but they would later be recovered. The recovery of nearly 33,000 text messages from Sandra's MacBook using a password related to Matthew Farwell's name provided a crucial breakthrough. Despite Farwell's attempts to have Sandra delete incriminating messages, the messages had been syncing to her laptop. These messages revealed the true nature of their relationship, including explicit discussions of their first sexual encounter when Sandra was 15. On February 24th, Farwell was placed on paid leave and the internal affairs investigation intensified. The recovered text messages revealed that William Farwell had also engaged in a sexual relationship with Sandra and had encouraged her to secretly record her sexual encounters with others. Facebook messages also suggested that Divine had been seeking sex with Sandra. By the spring of 2022, Holmes had compiled substantial evidence against the Farwells and Divine. Matthew Farwell resigned from the Stoughton force. William Farwell resigned after being placed on leave and moving to Maryland, and Divine was interviewed. The interview with Divine revealed inconsistencies in his statements and further highlighted the problematic culture within the department. Despite the mounting evidence, the medical examiner's ruling of suicide remained a significant obstacle. The broken necklace missed at the scene and the fact that Sandra's hair was not moved out of the way of the ligature, as is typical in hangings, were crucial details overlooked. The medical examiner did not request photographs from the scene until 3 months after Sandra's death, just days before finalizing the determination of suicide. The medical examiner's office defended this timeline, stating that such requests for additional information are not unusual. However, the fact remains that crucial photographic evidence, including the image of the broken necklace, was seemingly not fully considered in the initial assessment. By mid-May 2021, Dr. Capa-Martinez had reached her conclusion. Pending review: cause of death, asphyxia by hanging; manner of death, suicide. This ruling solidified the official narrative and significantly hampered any potential murder investigation. Trooper Fanning, in a later affidavit, cited the medical examiner's findings along with physical evidence from the scene, Sandra's mental health history, and personal notes discovered to support the suicide conclusion. Following this ruling, the district attorney's investigation shifted its focus to the alleged larceny by Farwell, a move that deeply frustrated Sandra's family. Perazzi recalled Fanning assuring her that they were still seeking some form of accountability for Farwell, but she viewed this as a desperate and insufficient response. Meanwhile, within the Stoughton Police Department, Deputy Chief Brian Holmes's internal affairs investigation was gaining momentum. Holmes assembled a team of retired state troopers and an IT expert to conduct interviews and analyze phone data. Their focus was not on investigating a crime, but rather on determining whether Matthew Farwell had violated departmental rules and regulations. However, their findings would have significant implications for the larger investigation. On September 30th, 2021, troopers provided Holmes with Sandra's text messages, a massive trove of 50,000 pages of jumbled conversations. Holmes and his team meticulously reviewed these messages, eventually receiving a more organized version that clarified the communication flow. William Farwell had already admitted to having sexual encounters with Sandra and acknowledged her pregnancy with his brother's child. The internal affairs investigators discovered sexually explicit photos and videos exchanged between William and Sandra while he was on duty. They also found evidence that William had encouraged Sandra to secretly record her sexual encounters with others, a criminal offense in Massachusetts. Furthermore, they uncovered Facebook messages suggesting that Robert Divine had sought sexual contact with Sandra by 2020. By the spring of 2022, Holmes had amassed substantial and potentially damaging evidence against the Farwells and Devine. Matthew Farwell, who had been on paid leave and collected nearly $89,000, resigned from the Stoughton force on April 1, 2022, just before he was scheduled to be interviewed by Holmes's team. A few days later, after a news story exposed the connection between Matthew Farwell and Sandra, Devine and William Farwell were also placed on paid leave. William subsequently resigned as well, moving to Maryland and accepting a position with the Transportation Security Administration. In his resignation letter, he denied all allegations of misconduct and expressed a lack of confidence in the town's investigation. Devine was interviewed by Holmes's team in mid-April 2022. By this time, he had graduated from law school and become a licensed attorney. The interview was reportedly tense. Devine initially claimed he learned about Matthew Farwell's sexual relationship with Sandra only when Farwell was placed on leave, but later admitted that Sandra herself had told him about it. He emphasized that Sandra had described the relationship as consensual. He also admitted to flirting with a young explorer in his program, although her name was redacted in the internal affairs report. Devine denied any knowledge of the Farwell brothers impersonating police officers as teenagers, a claim that Holmes found to be untruthful based on previous documentation. The internal affairs investigation, while focused on departmental violations, exposed a deeply troubling pattern of behavior and a culture that seemed to protect those in positions of power. The recovered text messages, the accounts of inappropriate behavior by Devine, and the Farwell brothers' attempts to cover their tracks all pointed towards a much more complex and sinister narrative than the initial assessment of suicide. The question remained, would this new information be enough to finally bring justice for Sandra?
In a world where the darkest secrets lie just beneath the surface.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence says otherwise.
Where hidden killers roam unnoticed in the shadows.
I think you would definitely be looking at a blend of toxic, very bad narcissistic personality traits, and they will be vengeful and possibly resort to violence.
Join Tony Bruschi as he uncovers the truth behind the most chilling cases.
They said it was an accident, but the evidence clearly says otherwise.
Each episode, we dig deep into the minds of those who commit the unthinkable.
To your point on narcissism, he thinks in his own mind how witty he is.
Yeah.
But he lost that jury. I was done with him in 2 minutes.
From unsolved mysteries to infamous crimes.
Geez, you've just talked about how you've taught yourself how to do everything under the sun. I bet you did a YouTube video, how to best kill somebody with a knife.
Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi takes you where few dare to go.
How does someone with such a dark secret go unnoticed for so long?
With multiple new episodes every single day.
We're not just telling stories, we're seeking justice.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1. Go to chumbacasino.com.
Chumbacasino.com. Got it.
Step 2. Collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step 3. Play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games. All for free?
Step 4. Unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.